We want to remind you we're a listener-supported program. Help out if you can. We'd appreciate it ever so much. Billy Shears, music director, thank you, Billy, for great tunes. And all the folks on the Head On Radio Network, stay tuned for another Head On show. Don't forget, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. You've been listening to the Guy James Show.
This is the Quality News Network. Crude oil was trading at a new record high of $89 a barrel. We'll have the latest price coming up in our business block. Earlier in the day, President Bush held a press conference at the White House. He said he opposed Turkey's possible military offensive into northern Iraq against Kurdish rebels. President Bush stated, quote, "We are making it very clear to Turkey that we don't think it's in their interest to send troops into Iraq," end quote. Turkey's parliament today overwhelmingly approved a possible offensive over the border into northern Iraq. Also, during President Bush's press conference today, he urged Congress to drop the proposed resolution that would label the 1915 killings of 1.5 million Armenians during the Ottoman Empire as genocide because it would hurt U.S. relations with Turkey, a NATO ally. Additionally, President Bush also warned that if Tehran gets a nuclear weapon, it would raise the risk of a, quote, World War III, end quote. Later at the U.S. Capitol today, President Bush awarded the Dalai Lama the Congressional Medal, the highest civilian honor. China has protested the ceremony because Beijing feels the spiritual leader's push for independence for Tibet is a threat to China's sovereignty. To avoid angering China, President Bush kept the earlier meetings he had private with no media access. The latest Reuters Zogby poll finds record lows for the president and Congress. President Bush's job approval fell to 24%. Congressional job approval remains at 11%. The Reuters Zogby survey also found that 66% of those surveyed say the country is on the wrong track. That wrong track number is up 4 points from the previous month. The House of Representatives is going over an eavesdropping bill that would require a special authorization if the foreigner has contact with someone in the U.S. The ACLU has denounced the bill. The Senate Judiciary Committee began hearing say on President Bush's nominee to be the next Attorney General, Michael Mukasey, who said that the president does not have the authority to use torture techniques against terrorism suspects. That stance was not taken by the former Attorney General, Alberto Gonzalez. In January, Social Security benefits are going up 2.3%, according to the government. That cost of living adjustment will affect nearly 15 million Americans, and it means they will get an extra $24 a month. You're listening to the Quality News Network, Science and Business News next.
Civility takes an effort. It requires that people remember that relationships need our attention. Whether we are talking about our most important personal relationships, how we get along with our colleagues, or the way we interact with strangers, it is what we contribute that defines the results. Even when the other people are not prepared to give their best selves, what we put in determines what we get out. Ralph Waldo Emerson suggested, we must be as courteous to a man as we are to a picture, which we are willing to give the advantage of a good light. This is the essence of civility. When we are civil to strangers, when we defer at the intersection instead of racing out ahead, when we hold the door for someone we don't know, when we smile at someone who catches our eye, we declare our choice for a civilized society. For more information, click on the Civility button on our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com.
The CDC reports that deadly cases of invasive infections of a drug-resistant staph superbug are threatening to become even more prevalent than AIDS. Each year, more than 90,000 Americans get the potentially deadly staph infections. The Commerce Department reports that in September, construction of new homes fell to a 14-year low. The 10.2% drop was a larger decrease than was expected. The social network MySpace is teaming up with the internet telephone service Skype, which is owned by eBay. This will allow instant messenger text chats. MySpace is owned by News Corporation. In a turnaround, Apple now says it will allow third-party applications for its iPhone. CEO Steve Jobs made the announcement in a posting on the company's website. Since the iPhone was launched in June, 1 million units have been sold. The largest consumer electronics chain, Best Buy, says it will stop selling analog television sets. Flat panel and high-definition TVs are taking their place. Gold is trading at $762.50 an ounce. Light sweet crude is currently trading at $87.40 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. And near the close of Wall Street today, the Dow Jones is down 20 points at 13,892, the NASDAQ up 29, and the S&P 500 up 3. There's more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Bramov.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. I want to introduce you to my very special guest today. His name is Mark Thompson. I should call him Reverend Mark Thompson because he is recently an ordained minister, and his African name is Matsumela Mfumo. For those of you that have subscribed to XM in the past, you've probably heard me on Mark's show, Make It Plain. We had M&M Fridays, Mark and Mark Fridays, for a long time. Mark Thompson's been in the business, I think, some 17 years. So those many of you will already know who he is. Well, recently, as some of you know, XM terminated Mark's contract. We can talk or not about the reasons for that, but I have big congratulations to him. He's bringing Make It Plain to Sirius Satellite Radio. And so throw away your XM subscription. Just throw it away. Put it in the garbage. Get a Sirius subscription, and hopefully I'll be on there as well. We'll do another M&M Friday or something like that, and hopefully we'll get more of the Horn Network, hopefully eventually on Sirius. For now, let me introduce to you the Reverend Matsumela Mfumo, Mark Thompson. How you doing?
Fine, Mark. How are you? Thank you for the introduction, man. How's everything going?
Well, you know, you really are a premier activist. I mean, you're one of the few people in Washington, D.C. that African-Americans really look to, really nationally, but particularly here in Washington, to tell people how it is, to tell people how the community's thinking and what they're thinking. And I'm really, really impressed and glad to hear you're going to be on Sirius.
Well, thank you for saying so, and I'm sure in the near future we'll have an opportunity to do some of the things that we used to do. I think a lot of people enjoyed that. And I appreciate your support and the support of your listeners, your audience, over the past few months as we've been making this transition and talking to Sirius. It's really going to be an exciting opportunity. I'm very thankful to Sirius for showing an interest in Make It Plain. And I think that it's really going to be something very, very special.
Well, I want to get into the issues of the day because there's only so much shop talk that we can have. But before we do it, I just don't know if there's any other thing you want to say. Maybe you don't want to say anything about the end of XM and the beginning of Sirius. Maybe it's best not said. But if there's any particular thing you want to say, I want to give you that chance to say it.
Well, just to make one correction, I was actually, the show was actually done away with by Radio 1, not XM.
That's true.
The satellite stations, satellite networks, use a lot of what we call third-party programmers, and Radio 1 was one such programmer. So technically, it wasn't XM. Our show was broadcast by Radio 1 on XM Radio, and now we get to move to Sirius, and I think we're all thinking and hoping that in the very near future, both may merge anyway.
And right. No, they've been talking about that.
Yeah, so we'll all be one big happy family. But in the interim, I appreciate you encouraging people to get serious subscriptions. We're going to have a lot of fun with this. And one of the logistical advantages to going to Sirius is that our broadcast was not heard over the Internet. It wasn't heard online.
That's
and
right.
People will be able to do that on Sirius now.
Oh, that's great news.
Yeah, so that'll expand us even further. And I know a lot of people are going to be appreciative of that because, as we all know, people like to listen to our shows, Mark, at work, even when they're not supposed to.
But, that's
true. They're on the job. But that's one of the great pastimes thinking to listen to Make It Plain or Radio Inside Scoop while you're sitting at your desk at work.
Well, that's terrific. And in fact, I'll give my pledge now. I'm going to talk with some of the serious people and see if we can't play some of those shows, maybe in rerun, maybe not on the Head On Radio Network where so many of my listeners check in. So I'll definitely take a look into that. We've had some great discussions, Mark, over the last year on everything from the presidential campaign and Dick Cheney and all he's done to some real good racial discussions. We talked about snitching. We talked about Clarence Thomas. I know that I don't know that our kinds of dialogue are that common in radio. I mean, I don't really hear a white guy and a black guy talking about race very, very openly, very often.
No, not at all. But I guess, you know, I guess too, a lot of times people look for disagreement. They look for the kind of dialogues you see on CNN's Crossfire, and you and I rarely disagree. The one thing you didn't mention, Mark, and maybe your listeners will recall, is that you and I actually went to high school together.
That's right.
In Nashville, Tennessee.
That's right. So we're both from the same town, so we maybe some different perspectives, but we come from the same background. And
right.
I think
right.
One of the things about Mark and I when we talk is we do agree on most things, but we have a different perspective, and where we come from, I think it's always very interesting. And speaking of different perspective, I hope you had a chance, Mark. I didn't get to talk to you before the show. I don't know if you saw Bill Cosby and Dr. Alvin Poussaint on Meet the Press last Sunday. Did you get a chance to see them?
No, I didn't. I've gotten several personal calls about it. I got your email with the video. Someone sent me the transcript. I just literally got off the plane from Nashville, as a matter of fact, a couple of hours ago. I haven't had an opportunity to look at that, but I wanted to ask you what you saw and what you thought of it, and I'd be more than happy to respond. I will say this at the outset. I have some very serious concerns about what brought all of this on. We all remember, I guess it's been quite 2 years, I'm not sure, when Bill
Even
Cosby...
Even three, maybe.
It's been that long? Okay, since Bill Cosby made the original comments he made that got him in a lot of trouble. I was very critical of those generalizations that he made, and so I don't know how much of that he posited again on Sunday or clean.
Well, let me tell you.
Have you? But what did he say?
Let me tell you what he did say. And I know I remember that very early on because one of my earliest shows, that's why it's 3 or maybe even 4 years now, was on Bill Cosby's comments, where I had some praise and some critical. The new book is called "Come On, People: On the Path from Victims to Victors." It's by Bill Cosby, like I said, and Dr. Alvin Poussaint, who is with the Harvard Medical School. He's a professor of psychiatry. And I found him a bit, I'd say, more fair than he was 3 or 4 years ago. He definitely put the onus on responsibility, particularly black male responsibility, family responsibilities. He definitely talked a lot about that, about, you know, raising children and education and putting the right values and against rap music. But at the same time, he was very clear to point out institutional racism, which I think was the other half of the argument that he wasn't really putting forth as much 3 or 4 years ago. I mean, we'll talk about, I mean, there's a lot of detail. It was a 1 hour show, and I took careful notes. But it seemed to me the essence of what he was saying is, yes, there's systematic racism. Yes, there's institutional racism. Yes, it exists. I don't deny that. Almost like I never denied that, but that he felt that, you know, there was certainly institutional racism back 30, 40, 50 years ago, certainly in the Jim Crow era. And at that time, African Americans knew that the DAC was stacked against them, but still worked very, very hard to achieve. I mean, we all know W.B. Du Bois famously wrote about the talented tenth, the idea that at least one tenth could achieve even in the face of lynchings and you know, far fierce, as bad as life is today, as racism exists today, I think it certainly was worse 50, 60, 70 years ago. And he talks a lot about responsibility in that regard. I don't know if you have a comment on that, and then we can talk about specifics.
Well, let me just say, when I hear the language and the buzzwords are very important. Victim, responsibility. I mean, frankly, Mark, and you know this better than anyone, these are all right-wing buzzwords that have been used over the past 20 years to marginalize, to be frank with you, black movement, black people I know Bill Cosby, but if anyone else were to say that, I mean, that sounds like the language of a Shelby Steele on Armstrong Williams. I'm not quite sure why Bill would choose that language or choose to go down that road. And frankly, that still concerns me. And I think we ought to take a more critical look. Again, I haven't seen the whole thing, but if it's anything like what he said before, even if it backs away a bit from it, I think there's still a great deal more work to do. And I think the shock was people didn't expect to hear that kind of talk coming out of Bill Cosby's mouth.
Well, let me ask you this, Mark. I mean, yeah. Here's, I think, the question, and it's a question certainly Americans are asking of all political stripes, you know, black and white, liberal and conservative. It seems to me, and feel free to disagree, but it seems to me that you're absolutely right. The conservative movements focus only on the responsibility of the individual. They never seem to even admit the systemic and institutional racism that exists in society, and they're definitely at fault for that. But I would argue some on the left do exactly the opposite. They only focus on racism. They only focus on the power structure, which is certainly true, but they don't focus on the individual choices that individual people make to make sure their kids get good education, that they don't call studying acting white, one of the things that Bill Cosby pointed out, to make sure that people have good role models. And why can't it both be true? In other words, why can't it be true that there's both racism, but at the same time, there are individual choices that maybe shouldn't be made that way?
Well, I think they both can be true, but I think part of individual choice and individual responsibility is acknowledging and not denying systemic and institutional racism. I think that's the first step. I think that when you acknowledge that, it actually empowers one to step up. And if we look at African Americans historically, that's always been the case. Du Bois, you mentioned the Talent and Tenth. You look at so many other movements toward black intellectualism, black academia, black education. They all were rooted in somehow trying to overcome systemic racism. Nobody, you never heard Du Bois say, well, you know, we need to let that stuff go and let's just get smart. That was a solution to systemic racism. And if that worked before, I don't know why that same argument wouldn't work again. This whole conservative trend of saying, well, we're not going to talk about it, we're going to deny it altogether, as if the two are mutually exclusive, is absurd. There is an historical precedent for the kind of argument you just described. And Bill Cosby and any other academic, like a Dr. Poussin, anybody else, really ought to know that. But when you start singling out our young people, and we have to go back to the original comment, he said that the problem of African Americans were rooted in the poor and impoverished, as if they were the fault of everything that's going on amongst African Americans. And that was, to me, just a very general and terrible statement to make. And I think it's a conservative movement statement. I think we need to move away from that and move toward empowering. But what are you empowering people to do? To empower people just to do something for the sake of doing something is one thing, but to empower people to understand that there is a lot of systemic injustice that still exists in America, and you must be educated, you must be prepared to confront that and not only improve your situation, but the situation of your collective community, I think is a far more motivational argument.
Let me give out the phone numbers. We're going to skip the break because I don't have Mark for the whole hour, and I want as much time as possible with him. But that shouldn't stop you from calling in. The number is toll-free, 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. Or if it's easier for you to remember, 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. I know a lot of your listeners, Mark, on XM may want to give us a call in. It's interesting to me when I saw Bill Cosby and Dr. Poussin, and they basically gave a lot of statistics. And let's face it, they're not pretty statistics. Statistics about incarceration rates, education rates, health care, poverty, you name it. They were clear to point out that this is definitely not all African Americans, but it is a significant part of the community. And their argument was that people are using racism as, I don't want to put words in their mouth, but basically, as I heard it, as an excuse not to better themselves. In other words, not that it doesn't exist. They never denied that it exists and that it's strong and it's powerful. But they said, for example, you know, if the Ku Klux Klan's marching outside your door, you know, you don't go there. That doesn't make it good. You fight it, but you know not to sort of go out there. And he gave that as an example of, you know, you don't take crack. You don't you avoid that, and you teach your children to avoid that. I don't know how you deal with that argument.
Well, let's be honest about it. First of all, in terms of some of the statistics, and I did see a few of those that were shared, incarceration rates, et cetera, the litmus test is how many of those statistics are brought on by African Americans themselves and by their own behavior, or are these examples of systemic racism? I mean, I think that we all know that the criminal justice system has been targeting African Americans for years and continues to target them. Those statistics,
the cocaine crack disparities,
would not be presented that way if other community groups were targeted in the same way. I mean, my question to Bill would be, well, Bill, how do you feel about the fact that the majority of crack users, the majority of drug users in America are not in fact black, but are in fact white? See, when you began to think of it in the context of, well, this is a black problem, you really buy into the racist stereotype. Drugs are an American problem. Right now, the economy is an American problem, and that's not just the fault of African Americans. The other thing, too, quite frankly, Mark, in the African American community, the whole argument about personal responsibility doesn't go over too well, and this has been one of Bill's major flaws. It doesn't go over too well, and it didn't go over too very well at all in his case, because just like any preacher would have to do in the pulpit, where you have had your own personal lapses in personal responsibility, it's kind of hard to criticize or hold accountable other people. And Bill's own personal issues have been made very public over the years. No one has judged Bill Cosby. No one has looked at Bill and said, well, Bill, you're less of a person. But, you know, it's kind of difficult for someone who's had their own lapses in personal responsibility to then come and say, well, everybody else is trifling and needs to get themselves together. So, unfortunately, I think
But, Mark,
Bill,
let me ask you, how do you raise people up? I mean, you're a reverend. You are an ordained minister.
Right.
You recognize a strong right and wrong. Clearly, Bill Cosby's not perfect. I'm not perfect. You're not perfect. We all have things in our past that we're not proud of. But, you know, Christianity certainly teaches redemption and teaches that even if you have a sinner past, you can certainly still teach people to do better in the future. What do you think Bill Cosby needs to do to appropriately, if apology is the right word, I don't know what the word is, but appropriately describe what he's done wrong in the past in a way that some of his message can get through? I mean, I don't think, if you disagree with me, let me know, but I don't think he's out to criticize is the wrong word. I don't think he's out to demean people. I really don't think he's out to put people down so much as
he's out to build people up. I think those original comments were very demeaning. Now he may be on a clean up tour right now, and that's good. He probably needs to do that. But I think those original comments were very demeaning. And frankly, if you're going to talk about sensitive areas where you as an individual have fallen short, then you need to acknowledge that. Otherwise, leave him alone. I mean, it didn't make a lot of sense with Bill Cosby talking about black men taking responsibility for their children when it was very well known in public. I guess he forgot that everybody in the whole wide world knows that he had a daughter out of wedlock while he was married to his wife.
If he had mentioned that, Mark, would he have been more credible?
Yeah, what you say is, I mean, this is what you say. You say, I've made mistakes. This is a mistake that I made, and others don't need to make the same. But for Bill to make a generalization that black men don't care for their children and black men,
no, he didn't say that. He said it's
no, no.
It's
in the original statement that
okay.
You know, he was talking about us being fathers, being
responsible
to our children.
Right.
But Bill did not acknowledge his own shortcomings in that regard. Bill did not acknowledge the issue of substance abuse. with his own family.
Is that crucial?
And see, so, you know...
Is that crucial to admit your own faults before you can lecture others? Is that a really a crucial...
When you're criticizing...
People don't listen to you until
when you're
you do
criticizing,
that.
If you're saying everybody else out here on drugs and they need to get themselves together, well, what is your answer, Mr. What are you doing, Mr. Cosby? How did you solve that issue in your own family? We all know about it.
So that's really crucial. You kind of have to face your own demons before you go out and preach about others.
Well, I mean, especially if your demons are specific to what you're talking about. Now, if you want to talk about something else that doesn't address your demons, then fine. But, I mean, come on, Mark. I mean, do you get out there and talk about things? And Bill was very critical. He wasn't giving advice. He was making some general...
You know, he's still critical.
But wait a minute, though. That was so strong that Rush Limbaugh used that audio for weeks to press his point. And we all know Rush Limbaugh is a racist. He used Bill Cosby's own audio to press his case.
Mark, how much of the stinging of Bill Cosby's criticism, and I do think he's toned it down somewhat, though not completely, but somewhat from what he did years ago. He certainly has the same issues of fatherhood and education and drug use and all and rap music. But how much of the criticism do you think came from the fact that Bill Cosby delivered it in such a way that the larger American audience, that the white audiences got to know it? If he had done this in an all-black group and in a black church, would it have been more received? How much of it is that I can criticize my friend in private, but I don't want to criticize in public?
He did do it in front of an all-black group. That didn't make any difference. That didn't make any difference at all. And everybody in the room, I believe it was an anniversary of Brown versus Board, everybody
yeah,
in the room was equally offended by what he said when he said it. And if you go back and look at it, a lot of it was incoherent. I mean, he even criticized the traditional African names. You just recited my African name. I would appreciate that. Bill would criticize that. You know, where we get these names
from? He didn't do that on Meet the Press. I guess he's come back. He
cleaned it up. I'll give him credit. If he's trying to clean it up now, that's fine. But what got this all started were those statements. Bill Cosby has been a comedian and an entertainer for years. He's been very, very well respected. And I think that this whole incident, and probably the reason he's written the book and done this, is probably to clean up some of that. But I'm very concerned when you're still using the language of the conservative movement. You know, I disagree with the notion that African Americans live through some culture or are living some culture of victimization or victimhood. I don't agree with that. You know, no.
Well, you don't think that's true at all?
I don't agree with that at all.
You don't think blacks sometimes think that they can't get ahead because they're black and therefore don't try?
Well, no, I don't agree with that. I think everybody tries. Everybody tries to do something to get ahead or improve their situation. I don't, you know, there's a myth that black folks sit at home and say, well, I'm not going to move, and I'm going to sit up here and smoke crack because I can't do anything else. No, that's not true at all. I don't agree with that characterization at all.
Okay. Let me ask you about gangster rap. It's one of the things that Bill Cosby mentioned. He was, as you've been, as you and I have been, we've talked on the show, he was quite critical of the use of the N-word, of misogyny, treatment of women. He made an interesting comment, though, that I think you and I might well agree with. I certainly agree with. He said that the predominant audience for gangster rap is white youths who get a vicarious thrill from living a black thug fantasy, including degradation of women, which I thought was a very interesting thing. He talked about a limo driver that was hired on a prom night by a group of young white high school students. And, as Bill Cosby describes it, the limo driver was treated very respectfully by the parents and so forth. And in the home, he said, was playing country music. And then they got in the car, and this group of young boys and four young girls, whatever, eight young white kids, then put in gangster rap along with the N-word and shootings and bitches and hoes. And finally he had to call another limo driver to take these kids around. To what extent should – I mean, I know you believe in free speech, but what should be done, what can be done about gangster rap in your view?
Well, it's not a good thing. But, again, I don't know not only what can be done about it, But second of all, even that type of characterization suggests that gangster rap is the problem itself. It is not. America and American media has had a fascination with violence and gangsterism for years. That's what's promoted in the movies.
Sure, Bonnie and Clyde goes back a long time.
Well, I mean, the most famous movie in the history of America, the most popular movie, is probably The Godfather.
Sure.
And when you look at all of these, you have it's not white kids living vicariously through black gangster rap. It's black gangster rap living vicariously through these movies. A lot of the guys uphold Scarface and movies like that, and then the white kids come back to it and say, "Well, now we can do this. The black kids are doing it." But there is a problem with the pervasiveness of images of sex and violence and misogyny throughout American media, not just with gangster rap. And it's interesting that, you know, there tends to be this emphasis on saying, well, let's deal with the blank gangster rappers, that's the problem. That's not the case at all. The governor of California himself is one of the individuals who's helped to promote the whole popularity of violence in media. The man, after all, he's Terminator, after all.
Yep.
And so, you know, America promotes violence. And we also see it right now in this very militarism that is taking place in Iraq. So I think the solution is, let's deal with the issue of violence on its own. Where is it? Rooted out at all levels. And, of course, gangster rap is a place to root it out. That's a place to address it. But this whole notion that it is black music or black rap that is somehow corrupting white kids, no, not at all. That's not.
Well, I think he was attacking the white kids as much as he was attacking the
I'm not saying he was saying that, but there's some people who feel that way, you know, who feel, you know, forget. I mean, that was Amos's argument. He said Nappy Headed Ho because that's what the black gangster rappers have popularized. Where did the black gangster rappers get Nappy Headed Ho from? You see, it didn't come from them. So if you deal with the root of it, and again, that gets back into the origin of all of this, I would say if that's what Bill posited, that argument stops short. This is a popular genre in America: violence, sex, misogyny, homophobia, all of that. I mean, that is the thing. And if black gangster rappers are participating in that, it's only because that seems to be what everybody else in media is doing too.
Let me ask you one more question, and I know you've got to go. He talked a lot about the decline of marriage, the decline of the family. He talked about the fact that 50 years ago, he cited statistics that I think he said 4 in 6 kids came from two-parent homes, and now it's 2 in 6 coming from two-parent homes. This, of course, is a famous discussion, goes back to Senator Daniel Patrick Moynihan of New York, who wrote in 1965, about the decline of the black family. And to Bill Cosby, this is a significant concern. He talks about the need for male role models and so forth. I'm curious to know what do you think about what he says? How much do you agree with it? How much is it unfair? What do you think?
Well, no, I agree. There is a decline in family. But, again, you have to be very, very careful that all of these things are not restricted to African Americans. There's a decline in marriage and family, again, in America, period. And the African American community represents a microcosm of that. The decline in marriage and family in the black community and the decline in male role models is a direct result of some of the systemic racism that we've just talked about, especially through the criminal justice system, especially through unemployment. Black male unemployment is twice that of anybody else's unemployment. Now, what is that all about? Why is that? Is that because that twice as many black males have decided that there's so much racism, I'm not going to go out here and try to get a job? Or, in fact, is it the case that there aren't jobs out here for African-Americans and there aren't jobs that African-Americans are being hired for? And I think we have to look at all of that. You can't be a male role model and live up to the standard of what men do in today's modern society and not be employed, not be able to provide for one's family. And in this country, unfortunately, the laws are constructed in such a way where for many women, it is more beneficial to be a single parent. Because if there's a male who's unemployed in the home, there's still the expectation that he would be a provider for that family. But if a mother needed to get some of the benefits of being a single parent with a child, then she would only get those benefits if she were out on her own. And that's been the case. That's had a profound effect over the past 30 or 40 years as well. So, of course, there should be more families. Of course, there should be more men in the home. I mean, everybody would want that. But the solutions are all have to do with a holistic approach, not just individuals, but a spiritual approach, a policy approach. What are the things that are in place that encourage the coming together and support of family and marriage?
Well, Mark, you and I work very often to change policy, to end some of the nature of this drug war, to end the crack cocaine disparity, to help to give people a chance, an education chance. One of the things you and I both decried was Clarence Thomas and overturning basically most of Brown versus Board of Education, him arguing that, you know, there's no need for desegregation anymore. You and I fight the systemic things at the policy level in Washington. It's one of the reasons I've always had a lot of respect for you. What role do you think those of us outside of Washington, those that, that can't affect policy like you and I try to do, has? I mean, what Bill Cosby is saying is the role of the individual parent, the individual minister, the individual teacher. What role should people play to fight some of these things at a very micro level?
Well, I think that, again, we have historical models, people who weren't in public policy positions but still influenced it, and those models are still good ones. I think that what Dr. King was trying to do was affect policy from the outside by educating the African-American community, organizing the African-American community, and then mobilizing the African-American community. And of course, that expanded. By the time of his death, he was educating, organizing, and mobilizing the entire nation around the peace movement against the Vietnam War. There is a role that we play, I think, as radio talk show hosts, not to be on the radio to be cute or simply to make jokes, but to inform people for the purpose of empowering them so that once they are empowered, they're informed as well, which means they're educated, and then they're organized so that whenever the radio was turned off, they're in some place where there's some type of strategy being developed to confront these issues, whether it's by using the ballot box or any other means, and then mobilizing to go to the ballot box or mobilizing by other means to have an effect and say these are policies that need to be changed. These are things that, that need to be addressed. But people have got to develop another interest in that. I will agree that leaders in local communities, whether they be community groups, organizations, or churches, have got to step up to the plate. And I think, frankly, that we all are victimized, black, white, whatever, by being a part of what's really just a consumer culture. There is more consumerism than anything else going on in America right now. And so whatever is presented to us, we consume. But what are we going to produce? What are we going to produce in terms of movement and thought and change as opposed to just reacting? We ought to be proactive as opposed to just reacting to whatever we see on television every news cycle. That's not the answer. And so I think that that has to be a sea change, a shift in attitude so that we're able to, because we had Katrina. What do? We reacted. If another Katrina would have happened tomorrow, we'd be in the same posture. Because what has been done since then,
very
on a community level, on a local level, on a national level, outside of Washington, let alone in Washington, to prevent that kind of thing from happening again. We've talked about it ad infinitum. But what have we really put in place? What is it that exists as a group, as an organization, as a movement that would say to Washington, you know what, we better not make that mistake again. Because here's a mobilized cadre, a mass of people who will respond in a harsh way to any of us who allow that to happen, any of us policymakers who allow that to happen. But I don't know that that exists. I don't know that that exists in the way that it should. But this, Mark, is the importance of radio. The conservative movement understood radio. They borrowed a page from the history of black radio. And in the early 1980s, they decided, through Rush Limbaugh and others, that they would use the airwaves to mobilize their movement.
And they certainly did a great job. They've put billions of dollars into it.
Right, they've done it successfully. Well, I would say to the African-American community, we need to get back to it. The Democrats and many liberals waited too late to embrace that formula, and so that's why some institutions like Air America and others, unfortunately, are suffering because they've been drowned out. But, I mean, they waited too late. I mean, they took for granted, well, that's not a big thing. That's a short-lived fad. But I don't think there'll ever be a substitute for speech over the radio. I don't think it will ever be obsolete. There will always be an audience for people to hear and listen and have discussion and be mobilized by discussion. There's something about lending that ear and listening that even supersedes what we might see on television, what we might hear, people in their cars listening and understanding and getting motivated. That's an art. That's a science.
And the other part of it is having a chance to respond. I mean, I tell you, we've gone through already 40 minutes, and I was told not to take you over a half an hour. But I hope you can stay after the break. If you got to go, you got to go, Mark. Tell us what people can expect on Sirius. When will we know when you're going to be on? What are the details?
Well, the next couple of weeks we'll be making announcements about when the launch is. And
okay, I'll put it on my website, definitely.
Sure.
And people in the Head On Radio Network will have a chance to check you out, and hopefully some of your listeners will check us out, because we are doing right here on the Horn exactly the kind of progressive radio, informed radio and discussion that's so desperately needed that you help promote. Mark, thanks for – you and I could talk forever, as you know, and we'll have a lot more opportunity to do that in the future. I want to thank you for coming here on the Inside Scoop. I appreciate it.
Thank you, too, man. All right. Keep up the good work.
Thanks so much. All right. We're going to take a quick break. If you want to call in and talk about anything that Mark talked about, I'm going to encourage you to do so. 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366, or you can call 888-488-MARK. We'll be right back after this.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
America's most dangerous investigative reporter, Greg Palast, joins Bob Kincaid for a bit of conversation radio.
But I have to tell you, this is such a pleasure to be able to actually lay it out.
Greg, anytime you want to lay it out, okay? We're reinventing things here. We call it conversation radio. We're very serious about that. And anytime you've got one of those that's a bit of a Gordian knot, bring it here, please. because there are people hungry for information and who are willing to, you know, this is not the Fox audience. We actually sit and think about stuff.
I like it. That's why I like this. It's the head-on radio network as opposed to the head-off television network that we've been suffering with. So I do appreciate your work, and let's set up another time. Take it easy, Bob.
Indeed. Take care, Greg. Thank you so much.
Head-on with Bob Kincaid, weeknights, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern, here on America's Liberal Voice, the Head-On Radio Network.
Got a police dog craving for a fight.
There's a place where a total stranger will give their blood to save your life. There's a place where someone you never knew will save your child from drowning. A place where people will give you food and shelter after a flood. There's a place where, when you need it most, someone will reach out their hand, put it across your shoulder and say, "Everything's going to be okay." That place is called America, where we look out for each other. And it's up to us to keep it that way. When you help the American Red Cross, you help America. Call 1-800-RED-CROSS or visit redcross.org today.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I hope you enjoyed hearing the Reverend Mazzamella Mapfuno, my friend Mark Thompson, the one who has invited me on his show, Make It Plain, for M&M Fridays we've had every week for a year. And as you could hear, he and I can go on a lot of topics for a long time. It's amazing how much he packed in just that 40 minutes, frankly. I would have liked more time, and we will get more time with him in the future. 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366, or 888-488-MARK, 888-488-MARK. You know, he and I have a slightly different perspective. I agree with everything he says, plus, if you will. I do understand what Bill Cosby and Dr. Poussin are saying. I don't deny any of the things that Mark is talking about with institutional racism. It's definitely out there. It definitely exists. All you have to do is look at the drug war. All you have to do is look at the cocaine crack disparity and sentencing and so forth. But at the same time, I recognize that there are people who are not good role models. I remember when I used to teach at an inner city school. This is way back in the early 90s, but for a semester, I taught in a school that was, 98% black and 2% Latino just outside of New Haven, Connecticut when I was in law school. And I do remember people coming up to me and wondering, asking me, you know, what's the purpose of all this anyway? And I was teaching them some really what I thought important things. I was teaching them street law, their legal rights, what to do if a police officer arrests them. We were role-playing. I remember one role-playing where I said, okay, you're the cop, and you're in the car, and you stop them, and the kid started hitting the other kid. I said, what are you doing? He said, well, that's what they do in my neighborhood. But at the same time, I do remember kids coming up to me and saying, you know, what's the point? I'll be dead by the age of 25 anyway. Because they lived in neighborhoods that were full of gangs wielding guns and selling drugs. Largely because we have criminalized drugs, there is a lucrative market, and just as in Prohibition, we have gangs that make millions of dollars selling drugs. And they make these streets very dangerous. And there's definitely some people out there, largely among the very poorest, largely African-American, though certainly this is true in some other poor urban communities as well, white, Latino, or so forth, this view that, hey, you know, the only way to succeed is to play basketball or do rap music or to sell drugs or to do any of these things that, frankly, drugs will get you in jail, and the other two things, you can't all be 6'10" and play basketball. And you can't all be a rap artist. And I think sometimes if Bill Cosby goes too far in one direction, Mark goes too far in the other, and he's my friend, and I think he can take a little criticism. But I think sometimes he doesn't emphasize personal responsibility enough. He certainly does as a minister. I mean, there's no question that as a minister, he goes and he talks to kids and tells them they need an education and so forth. But it's really, I guess, two sides of the same coin. It's not that Mark is wrong. It's not that Bill Cosby is wrong. I think they're both right. It's just a question of what you focus on. And traditionally, as a policy analyst, as someone like me who's worked in government, I've often focused on the policy choices because I do think it's important that we make sure that people get an equal education in America. Mark talked about how many black men are unemployed, and largely that's true because, let's face it, blacks don't get an equal education to whites in America. Brown versus Board of Education has not been achieved, and in fact we're going backward. We're going to more segregated, unequal, separate schools where most black kids are not getting the same education that most white kids are getting. That's a fact of life in America today. But a lot of what Bill Cosby had to talk about was not so much black and white, as I heard it, was poor and rich, were the opportunities that aren't allowed to poor people today. We know that George Bush, of course, has vetoed the S-CHIP, which would provide health care for children, because he cares more about, you know, bombing Iraq or giving tax cuts to the rich or giving all kinds of subsidies to his friends at Blackwater than he does about allowing poor or even middle class, lower middle class kids in America the chance to just live. So I don't deny at all that the deck is stacked against poor people in America. It's obvious. I don't deny that the deck is stacked against black people. But at the same time, I do respect people like Bill Cosby who are speaking to their own communities and saying, don't use racism as an excuse. It is there. Don't deny it's there. Continue to fight against it, but don't use it as an excuse. Because back in the 50s, back in the 40s, when things were a lot worse under Jim Crow, back in the 20s when there were lynchings, back in, you know, the 1800s when there was slavery, you still saw a tremendous amount of fortitude among most, dare I say, African Americans. And you saw some more achievement at that time, to some extent, than you do today. So I hear what he's trying to say, and I don't see it, at least in its second incarnation. Mark talked about his first incarnation. But I don't see it as so much putting people down as trying to raise them up. The title of Bill Cosby's book is Come On, People, On the Path from Victims to Victors. And I think that, I don't know, it's hard to know what motivates people. Is it Bill Cosby's kind of tough love? Is it fighting against racism? Is it a little bit of both? And is it so wrong to mention these facts? I mean, it's not something people like to talk about. I got to tell you, whites talk about it even less than blacks, at least liberals do, because it's something that we're very unhappy about. It's interesting. When you talk about poverty in America, that is something that liberals talk about. But when you talk about the difference between black and white, it's something I think that white liberals shy away from, you know, mentioning that so many, these are some of the statistics that Bill Cosby put out, that 94% of blacks are killed by blacks, that they are overrepresented both as murderers and murder victims, understanding that far less than 1% of African Americans are either murderers or murder victims, but that they are overrepresented in both of those categories. And I just want to focus, I guess, on both. I want to focus on the institutional problems. At the same point, is I want is people to focus on individual responsibility as well. I'm going to take another quick one-minute break, give you a chance to call in. I'd like to hear if you folks agree or disagree with me. 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-444-443-2366. One-minute break. We'll be right back after this.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got
to
go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm glad I took that quick little break. I know a lot of you don't like to call in while you're listening, so I wanted to give you that chance. Diana from Washington State, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Oh, hi, Mr. Levine.
You can call me Mark, Diana, absolutely.
Okay. I'm calling because I take the bus quite a bit up here in Western Washington, and I go through Tacoma, Washington, to my destination, which is in Tacoma. And
yeah.
I see a lot of young guys who are unemployed, who are African American, and, you know, my heart goes out to them, and I think, why can't we do a Manhattan-style education project and something that just doesn't give education but gives a future after that education? Because you and I both know, Mark, if you've worked in Washington, D.C., like you've mentioned, that the jobs are leaving this country, but we have to get these kids into jobs that actually have a future. I graduated from Evergreen State College, and most of my liberal arts, which I was graduate, they're not finding the work out there. It's very, very tough. And so I would just like to see some of these young guys, especially these teenagers, who look like they are without hope. And that's what causes that dissatisfaction with their own lives, is that when they're hopeless, they cannot explain that hope.
Diana, I agree with you on so many levels. I agree with you on so many levels.
We don't have anybody talking about that except Edwards and I think Obama. And Hillary, she never lived this life. I think Bill was very interested in getting the black vote, but I still consider Bill more of a Republican than a Democrat.
I'm not going to go that far. I'll tell you, Bill Clinton came from a lower middle class family. He came from a single mother. He had an alcoholic stepfather. I can't speak so much for Hillary, but I think Bill Clinton really does care about poor people and raising people up. And I think that NAFTA was it's a good question, by the way. It's a fair question. I think that part of it was he had a Republican Congress. What Bill Clinton said he wanted with NAFTA was two things. He wanted both environmental controls and he wanted wage controls. In other words, we shouldn't have to compete with people who are paying, you know, a dollar a day for somebody to work.
Well, then he should have put tariffs on.
Well, unfortunately, he didn't. I mean, look, there was a Republican Congress, and he triangulated. He went to the middle. I don't think he passed his version of the bill, but
just like Edwards has apologized for his vote for the Iraq War, I think both Clintons should disavow the NAFTA vote, because I think that, to me, I see that reverberating. You get on the freeway. And that's part of the reason I take the bus up to Tacoma, because I just can't stand all those huge trucks. But all that crap that's coming from China, we all know it. And we're like living with our heads in the sand, Mark. We've got
to get
this
country back on track. I think people realize the globalization is much more of a danger than they used to. Whether it's the environmental danger or the wage danger, I think people are starting to realize it. Some ways we had to decline from the Clinton years. You know, in the Clinton years, not only did the rich get richer, but the poor and the middle class got richer too. And today we, of course, have the worst income disparity in America. So I think
and
that...
And you see it in Washington. You see it the most in the inner cities where I get off the bus to go see my mother in a nursing home, and I don't even want to get into that subject. But I go
well,
there...
Diana, I'm sorry I have to cut you off just because we're closing in on the end of the hour. I hope you'll call in again tomorrow or any other time. Thanks very much for calling in the Inside Scoop. I appreciate it. Tomorrow we've got a very, very interesting guest. You thought Mark Thompson was controversial. Wait till you hear from Dr. James Hutchins. He is the president of Christians United for Israel. He is with Pastor John Hagee's organization, and we're going to talk to him. Oh, a very interesting talk. Don't miss tomorrow's show. This is Mark Levine signing off.
This is the Quality News Network. At the U.S. Capitol today, President Bush awarded the Dalai Lama the Congressional Gold Medal, the highest civilian honor. China has protested the ceremony because Beijing feels the spiritual leader's push for independence for Tibet is a threat to China's sovereignty. To avoid angering China, President Bush kept the earlier meetings he had private with no media access. Earlier in the day, President Bush held a press conference at the White House. He said he opposed Turkey's possible military offensive into northern Iraq against the Kurdish rebels. President Bush stated, quote, "We are making it very clear to Turkey that we don't think it is in their interest to send troops into Iraq," end quote. Turkey's parliament today overwhelmingly approved a possible offensive over the border. The vote was 507-19. Also during President Bush's press conference today, he criticized Congress for dragging its feet on key legislation. However, he urged Congress to drop the proposed resolution that would label the 1915 killings of 1.5 million Armenians during the Ottoman Empire as genocide because it would hurt U.S. relations with Turkey, a NATO ally. Today, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said it, quote, "remains to be seen," end quote, if the entire House will vote on that resolution. Additionally, President Bush warned that if Tehran gets a nuclear weapon, it would raise the risk of a, quote, World War III, end quote. The latest Reuters Zogby poll finds record lows for the president and Congress. President Bush's job approval fell to 24%. Congressional job approval remains at 11%. The Reuters Zogby survey also found that 66% of those surveyed say the country is